on the phone from Israel is IDF Colonel in the Reserves, Reuven Ben Shalom, who is also a cross-cultural strategist. Reuven, thank you so much for chatting with us again. Last time we spoke, the Reserves were on standby until President Trump left the region. He has since left. Have those reserves been deployed, and what is their role?
Well, Shalom, Paula, and thank you for having me back. Israel declared that we're going to revamp the operations in Gaza, and many were questioning if this is real or just threatening. Well, now it's obvious that this was absolutely real, a real plan that now is being implemented. Even the timeline was given after Trump leaves. And most of the reservists that were called up actually went to replace the standing army in other borders. So the standing army, the fighting divisions, there are five currently, can go to the Gaza arena. Of course, there are some reservists, but most reservists are in other arenas. And what we see now is Gideon's Chariots operation underway, a more ground offensive. The IDF is explaining that it's different from before, and they also explain in what way it differs from before. It's very controversial, also complex inside of Israel, understanding this and understanding how this will lead to fulfillment of the goals that were set, mainly bringing back the hostages.
Reuven, there have been reports circulating for a few days now that say that Mohammed Sinwar, Hamas's de facto military leader in Gaza, was killed in a tunnel strike. How significant is this for Israel's goals in Gaza?
I think that it's probably not right to look at one individual strike or taking out one leader and try to understand how that impacts the organization, but more look at Israel's strategy throughout this war. There was really decapitation of leadership, or even not the top leadership, but the entire command and control structure. And we certainly think this has an impact. You can see how it impacted Hezbollah. You can see how it impacted Hamas. But still, we have to understand that these terror organizations that really morphed from a terror army after degrading them significantly more to a guerrilla kind of organization, it's not like taking the leader away stops the fighting. It's not like the guerrilla fighters are going to say, well, we don't know what to do now because we don't have orders. More than that, they will try to show, to demonstrate to all of us that they don't mind, that the leaders can always be replaced. But still, we understand that on the ground, it makes a difference. It's not only the fact that they're senior, but that they're seasoned fighters and seasoned leaders. And the more experienced people that are taken off the battlefield, then the new people coming along are less experienced and less knowledgeable. And all this is to degrade their capabilities and to ultimately lead to a defeat of Hamas, which is what we're aiming for now.
Reuven, as I'm sure you know, a recent study found that 12% of IDF reservists are reporting PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and they're reporting those symptoms after combat service in Gaza. How is the military supporting these individuals, and what measures are in place to address mental health challenges?
That's a very important issue. Of course, soldiers everywhere, any army that fights a war, you have service members coming back home after experiencing horrific things, seeing their friends killed. And I think humanity in general has evolved and learned a lot. Going back in history, in times where we didn't even know this was something, and then coining it different terms. And I think we're in a good place today of understanding this. And I'm speaking on purpose. I'm speaking not only about the IDF, because remember, we collaborate very closely with our allies and friends around the world, because we all learn from each other as we fight similar fights. October 7th for us was something else. The magnitude was something else. Remember that we have PTSD also from civilians and other security elements that were thrown into the battlefield on that very day. So it's very widespread, which means that although we have good mechanisms in place, good doctrine and good professionals that deal with it, still the scope is something that we had to put quite a lot of effort, probably not enough yet. And you can hear this from the field. And we just have to do more and more in order to care for these people, understand what they went through, give them the right mechanisms, treatment. And again, I like international engagement. It will ultimately go to sharing these lessons with others and make sure that we all do the right thing and taking care of these people that sacrificed everything for us.
I don't know how many of our listeners are aware of this, but at least 35 active duty soldiers have killed themselves by suicide since the start of this war. Now, several of them were already recognized as suffering from serious mental health issues before they were called up to serve. So, similar to the question I asked before, Reuben, what protocols exist to assess and support the mental health of soldiers and reservists before deployment?
Well, I don't know the exact statistics, but the issue that you raised, of course, is very, very sensitive. Also historically sensitive in a way that it wasn't much discussed in Israel. And it's interesting because even the fact that you're asking me now in this broad forum means something. It means that even here we evolved and changed. We have a very strong organization that deals, you know, the health organization inside the IDF that always learns this and prepares for this. And from basic training or from even screening before, mental health issue is an important component. You don't always catch everything. And certainly this war taught us many things. The statistics now are troubling, certainly. But also here, we have to, again, it's difficult to detach this from the tragic personal level, and every case is tragic, and understand that it is a phenomenon to be expected. Also looking to other armies and other arenas, this issue was something that had to be dealt with. I know from my personal friends that are in this field that they're studying this, learning from mistakes in this issue, and also looking forward as a, you know, unfortunately a tragic outcome of this war.
Looking ahead, what are Israel's biggest challenges, in your opinion, in the near future, particularly when it comes to balancing military aims with growing global pressure and humanitarian concerns?
Well, I think your question gives the answer. right now, we're in a place where, unfortunately, this war is not a consensus in Israel, certainly not internationally, where after October 7th, everyone understood what we had to do. Now the images coming out of Gaza, the humanitarian situation, is making the pressure mount more and more, even from our dearest and closest friends. And it's understandable. I think Israel also does not do a good enough job in explaining the situation and in demonstrating how what we do is supposed to achieve the goals. And I said before, how are our ground operations currently supposed to bring back the hostages exactly? Many Israelis will argue that, on the contrary, what we need to do is to stop the war now in order to do make a deal that will bring back the hostages. But again, this is every Israeli will give you a different answer on this issue. So I think that's the big issue now, clarifying, and there's no clarity now, internally, externally. And I think this is what's going to we're going to be dealing with in the near future, the international pressure, the pressure by the U.S. administration that is extremely hard to predict. One day you can say Trump is with us and we can do everything we want. The next day, it's not exactly clear if Trump wants to bring the war to an end. The humanitarian issue is a big issue that we have to resolve. So unfortunately, I think we're going to troubled times from this perspective, and I'm not even clear what direction this is going to go.